You are listening to Punk News Podcast 581. The ginger ale episode. Back, and this is the ginger ale episode.
Are you having a ginger ale?
Yes, I'm having a can of dry. 7.5
Oh my god, I'm so jealous. It makes me want to run downstairs to my garage and go get a ginger ale, but I'm not going to. I'm going to be professional, just sit right here and talk about punk with you guys.
If you are in Egypt and someone asks you where you're from and you say Canada, what is the first thing every single Egyptian will say if you say you're from Canada?
Ginger ale.
Canada Dry! Canada Dry! Like, they love Canada Dry in Egypt for some reason. So, there you go.
It's the best.
No, wait, how do you know this, John?
Because I lived in Egypt.
So when you would see Canadian people introducing themselves, you would see that happen?
Oh, no, honestly, at the time, U.S. was kind of frowned upon.
You were lying and saying you were from Canada.
Yeah, that's the truth. I was lying. Absolutely, yes. I mean, listen,
plenty of Americans have done it.
I'm proud to be an American in general, but listen, Egypt ain't America. And, there's a lot more them than me. I'm from Egypt. Canada Drive. Like, also, if you wear a shirt that has Joey Ramone on it, they all think it's Michael Jackson.
Really?
Oh, I guess
that's so funny. That's awesome. Yeah, like Chris and I realized we had gotten in the habit of always saying, people would ask us if we were like traveling internationally and people asked us where we were from, we would always say we were from New York because we felt like somehow that was like code for like, I'm American, but like, I'm not like the awful kind of American. Like, I'm a New Yorker. Like, and we realized that in like many parts of the world that like worked, you know? But then when we went to Sri Lanka, like, they don't know American geography. They're like so far from America and they like don't, or at least many of the people we were running into, like, they just don't know or care about like major American cities. And we would say we were from New York and people would, like, literally not even know what country we meant. And they'd be like, where's that? And then we'd have to, like, begrudgingly be like, we're American. It is hard sometimes when you're traveling, especially if America's up to no good. Then you just, like, are like, man, what kind of shit am I going to take right now for this? I don't want to take any shit for this.
Well, don't take shit from nobody, as they say. But honestly, sometimes you should take shit from some people just because it's easier that way and not that big of a deal. Like, if your mom's giving you shit, maybe just take it. You know, if your wife or your husband's giving you shit and it's like an acceptable level, just say, whatever. If your school teacher's giving you shit and it's the last class before you graduate and go out to college, then just take it, man. Don't get expelled over putting Mr. Nutting's, a blow-up doll that said Mr. Nutting, up the flagpole and flying on senior prank day. Don't get expelled over that, man. You know, so.
All right.
I'll tell you what, though. Check this out. We're going to get this podcast proper. But if you play rugby and the jackass, one of the, not gym, what do you call the guys that teach gym? What do you call those guys? PE instructors? If sure. That guy is giving you shit and is being a total dick and is lying to your face, give that guy shit. And then he'll go to your history teacher, inquire to your history teacher, and your history teacher will come to you and say, well, you probably should – I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I think you should apologize to – what was that asshole's name? Van something. And then you – then what you should do is lie to your history teacher because you like your history teacher, say, oh, I'll do that, and then never do it. That's what you should do.
But I want to know – what M – like M – first of all, did you know that Americans always lie and say that we're from Canada when we're traveling internationally and we're worried about how we'll be received?
I've seen some memes.
Mm-hmm. And, like, yes. How does it make you feel as a Canadian?
It's okay. It doesn't bother me. I don't really, you know, like, that's all well and good. Canada might not be the best place to say you're from right now, but, yeah, It's kind of funny.
Well, I'm glad we're not, like, offending you. I think if I were Canadian, would I feel offended? I guess it would depend on who was claiming to be, like, representing my country. It would depend whether that was, like, a quality person or not, whether I was offended or not.
What was Saddam Hussein? Was it, oh, I'm from Canada? Listen, people, this show is not about world politics or soda. It's about punk rock. But do you guys want to hear my nightmare story, or do you guys just want to get into the news?
I'll leave it to you first.
All right. So I've been meaning to tell this maybe for about 1.5 or 2 years. We just never gotten to it. And this is either the first or second scariest nightmare I've ever had. And then we'll play a song. The only reason I'm telling is because it was a weird freaking dream, man. So here's the dream. I fall asleep. I'm at my grandmom's and grandfather's house. It's not exactly right, but in the dream, it is my grandparents' house, and my brain has reconstructed it basically as best as it can. It's not spot on, but it's pretty close. And there's a whole, and my grandfather used to have a lot of parties, you know, 2 or 3 parties a year at his house, and all the sons and daughters and brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews and whatever would come over, you know, 150, 200 people, you know. So I'm in the house, and there's a whole bunch of people there, and I recognize most of them. About half of those people are dead now, but in my dream, I didn't recognize that. In my dream, they're all alive at the time. But actually, most of them are dead now, to tell you the truth. And so I'm having a good time at this party. I'm talking to people, and then I go into the kitchen, and I open up the spice rack, and my friend Duncan steps out, and he's wearing ski gear, and he's like, it's time to go skiing. And then I'm like, oh, that's right. And within the context of the dream, I had agreed to go skiing with Duncan. So I had to leave the party to go skiing, even though I wanted to stay at the party. So I walk outside and I get in my car from high school, which was a 91 Pontiac Firebird. And Duncan's gone. It's just me again. And Duncan doesn't reappear. And so I'm in my Firebird driving to go skiing. And there's like a jump. But within the context of the dream, I've been driving for a while, even though it was like a split second. And it's starting to snow, and I'm on like a short bridge, and I realize that the snow is too deep for my Firebird, so I got to turn around and go home. So I turn around, I get out of my Firebird, and I get back in my Firebird, but now it's not my Firebird anymore. Now it's my dad's white pickup truck. And so I'm driving back home, and for some reason I stop at like a shopping center, and it's got like a 6 or 7 tall store building, and it's got a parking garage next to it that's like 7 stories tall. And I drive up the parking garage, I get out of my truck, and I talk to somebody that they've, like, pulled Ford into a parking spot, and they can't figure out how to get out. So I tell them, you just have to back up, and they don't understand that. So I explain to them how to back up, and they back up, and they get out. And I get back in my dad's truck, and I drive all the way back down the parking garage. And then eventually, I drive back to my grandparents' house for some reason. And I go back in, and my parents are sitting at the table, but it's not my parents. It's 2 people that don't look anything like my parents. But within the context of my dream, they're my parents, and I think they're my parents. So I'm sitting down, and we're, like, eating, and I think we're eating, like, what my grandfather and Uncle Bob would eat, like, almost every day or a lot. It's like, steak, like, grilled, but, like, not, like, good steak, like, cheap steak, like, grilled for something. They would always eat that. I don't know why. And so I'm eating it, and I take a drink, and I realize I'm having trouble picking up the forks and knives while I'm drinking. And the 2 people that are, quote, my parents, they start laughing at me. And I'm like, why are you laughing at me? And I take another drink, and I realize I'm having even more trouble picking up anything. And I realize that the drink I'm drinking is like, doped. And I realize that it's got, like, some kind of knockout stuff in it. And they keep laughing. and their faces distort, like in like Beetlejuice, like the faces elongate. And I realize, you're not my parents, you're somebody else. Who are you? And they won't tell me who they are. They keep laughing. And I try to stand up, and I'm so wobbly, I can barely stand up. I'm tripping over the chairs, and I within the context of the dream, I'm like, I'll go grab a knife and try to defend myself. And I fall across the table, and I fall down, and they keep laughing at me, and they move towards me, and I wake up. So that's the oh second scariest dream I ever had. How's that for a messed up dream?
Pretty creepy.
Yeah, not great.
So anyways, I'm going to play a song. This is Inner City Unit. Inner City Unit was Nick Turner of Hawkwind's spinoff new wave punk band, and they've got an album called Punkadelic, which is actually demos from before the first album. The first album is awesome. It's called Pass Out. It's in any context, it's an amazing album. But even without the Hawkwind context, I would still love the album. But that's called Pass Out. This album's called Punkadelic, and I was actually like, I got it a while ago. I listened to it a couple of times, but I really listened to it this past Saturday. I'm like, holy crap, this is like a really great compilation. And there's this one song that's not any anywhere else in their discography. It's called Cars Eat with Auto Face, and it's not really super representative of their other music, but it's kind of like a slow motion metal mosher before metal moshing existed. Punk moshing existed in like 1981, but like metal moshing didn't really exist at that point. So this is Cars E with Auto Face, just a slow motion crusher by Inner City Unit.
Yeah.
And we're back. Let's talk Record Store Day. Record Store Day has announced the 2022 edition. The previous one was actually The previous one did take place, but it was very much diminished because due to vinyl production delays, a whole bunch of things did not come out that were supposed to come out the last Record Store Day for Record Store Day Black Friday, which I was very happy about because I couldn't make that one. And so I was glad that actually stuff like wasn't going to be there because I wanted some of the stuff there. The new Record Store Day is going to be on April. Is it April 22nd? Ah, oh, snaps. Record Store Day is going to be April 23. April 23 in the USA, and there's a lot of stuff coming out. Some of the more notable stuff coming out is the a David Bowie Brilliant Adventure EP, which is just some outtakes from Bowie's 90s period. Blondie is putting out a double 7-inch EP called Sunday Girl, which is a bunch of different mixes of the track Sunday Girl. Ramones are putting out I think it's 5 or 6 album compilation of their post-Sire years of the, it's called the Sire Albums 1981 to 1989. So it is Ramones vinyl records that haven't been pressed on vinyl in the States in decades, and it's the first re-release of some of those records on vinyl in a long, long time. Let's see what else is coming out. Iggy Pop's putting out a live record from the 80s or 90s, which they usually put out. They're putting out demos for the LA, for the Heartbreakers LAMF record. Let's see what else is coming out. Devo is re-releasing, Oh No, It's Devo. Alice Cooper is re-releasing Brutal Planet from his new metal album. The Cure is doing a new version of Pornography. The Damned is re-releasing Strawberries. There's nothing super special about that. It's just basically a re-release of Strawberries. Mikey, they're re-releasing a 10-inch single for Mikey Dread, which would be pretty cool. Let's see. Foo Fighters are putting out something, but who cares? They suck. Let's see what else. There's a couple. Oh, Judas Priest is Elton John is re-releasing the complete Tom Bell Sessions, which has never been on vinyl before. It's been on CD. The Tom Bell Sessions were released on vinyl in the late 70s, and it's Elton John recording with Tom Bell, a famous Philadelphia Motown sound producer. They are now doing a vinyl version of the CD version, which is all 6 tracks, as opposed to the original 3 that were on the vinyl version from the 70s. Joan Jett's putting out an acoustic record. And Nicki Minaj is re-releasing the Beam Me Up Scotty mixtape as a double LP, which I'm always betwixt and between on my perspective of the concept of a vinyl mixtape, which is sort of contrary to the form itself. Lou Reed's put out some early demos, which is kind of cool. I mean, the Lou Reed estate, that is. And a whole bunch of other stuff's coming out. Patti Smith's putting out a compilation. And, Surfboard is finally doing a physical version of their new album, Keep On Truckin', but it's like limited to 1,000 copies, which is infuriating. so yeah, a lot of stuff's coming out on the punk news site. Like a lot of the readers were like bummed out and thought that it was like weak. I'm like, weak? This is one of the strongest record store days we've had in a long, long time. I'm psyched. And more, are you psyched or do you agree that this is weak and pointless reissues?
There's a lot of really cool stuff on here. Like, there's the new improved Kim Shatuck demos from the Muffs. There's BBC Live in Concert from Stiff Little Fingers. Like, there's lots of really, really cool stuff. There's the portraits of her with, like, various artists, and, like, Laura Jane Grace is on there and all that kind of stuff.
And T. Swift.
Yeah, can't forget the Record Store Day ambassador herself. so, like, there's lots of really cool stuff. I don't do Record Store Day just because I don't do the vinyl, but like, it's always cool to see like what's coming out, and then it's funny to see like what other things are in there. Like, one of them is Peppa's Adventures, the album by Peppa Pig.
And
like, I want the disc to be pink and have like ears and stuff. Like, that would be really fun. Yeah. Holly, what do you think of Record Store Day 2022?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's weak at all. It's one of those things where you're like, do people really think that? Or like, do they just want to have something to complain about? Or just like, it's not very specifically the like, you know, 20 bands that they're into. And so they deem it just like not good. I mean, there's like so much exciting stuff here. I mean, just the Blondie thing again. I mean, Sunday Girl is one of my favorite Blondie songs, like of all time. Like, just, I don't know. I think there's really cool stuff in here. I don't know. I feel like people just, they enjoy being naysayers. That's what it is, what it comes down to.
I agree. And not to fan too much over Taylor Swift, because I'm not even really a Taylor. I mean, I'm a fan of Taylor Swift, the person, just because of the things she does. I've never seen a full Taylor Swift album, but I really should do that. If I want to claim to be someone that is relatively knowledgeable about music, I really should listen to a full Taylor Swift album, which I'm not opposed to. I just haven't. But I think it's so cool how she really is. Like, she's stepping up where, like, a lot of other people would not step up or haven't stepped up. You know, and she still gets hate, you know, but I guess that comes with fame. It's not like she doesn't have tons of fans too, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, she's pretty adored. I think she truly cannot possibly let it bother her when people hate on her, because.
I disagree because Kanye was like hitting on her, smacking at her a lot. And you could tell it was really annoying to her, because once in a while she'd be like, dude, what you're doing is not cool.
Well, that's different. That's Kanye. I mean, that's like a person that's like her, you know, like her peer, you know, like in some senses, like a coworker. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's different. That I can see where you would take that personally. But I'm saying I don't think she's worried about like internet commenters saying like they don't like her affiliation with Record Store Day. Like wasn't that, like, that song of hers just broke, like, what was it? It just broke a record for, like, the longest song to make it to number one on the charts.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It beat, like, American Pie or whatever had, like, previously, like.
Take that, Don McLean.
Hey, he got to hold that record for a good long time, man. That was, like, a good run. Yeah, I don't think Taylor's, like, I don't think she's butt sore about, like, anybody, like, writing shit about her on the internet. Personally, I don't, she has the fucking time.
I gotta say, we really, really should not. It's not that we'll never talk about the commenters again, because you kind of have to, because it does give you stuff to talk about. But, like, I've recently seen the numbers again. Not that I haven't seen the numbers before, but I've seen the numbers dozens of times. The commenters so do not represent anybody except for, like, themselves. Like yeah. The commenters do not represent readers at all. They don't represent Facebook readers. Their perspective is such the minority. And what I was going to say is, all these negative Nancys, shouldn't these guys be like dancing around the fire? Like the Ramones, the Sire albums, 81 to 89. These are arguably the Ramones' quote worst albums, but actually listen to them. They're actually pretty good. I mean, they're not, some of them are hit or miss, but like they all have every single Ramones album has at least 2 to 3 monster jams on it and like two right. to three pretty good songs, you know? And so like if you want to get a lot of these records on vinyl, from the OG press, they're like 75 to 100 now. Except for me, because I bought them in the Netherlands 4 years ago, and they were only 18 euros in the Netherlands. But if you want to buy them now in the United States, they're like...
John, was that your mom? Did your mom buy that? That's so cool.
But what I'm saying is, this is pretty rad that, like, for the first time in 40 years, we're getting some Ramones records on vinyl that weren't on vinyl before. Like, that's cool. You know what I'm saying?
It's very cool.
Why aren't people like freaking out over this? It's pretty cool, you know?
I don't know. They had in mind, you know, exactly. Like they had in mind, like, that they, you know, they have their 20 bands that they like. And, like, if they don't see those bands listed, they're like, meh, this sucks.
And so here's the question. We're going to call this now. I am going to try to purchase Alice Cooper's Brutal Planet, arguably his worst album, as Alice does nu metal. And I'm going to try to give it a critical reevaluation. Do you guys think that I'll come back and say, you know, Brutal Planet's not that bad? Yes, new metal, but you know.
Who knows? I mean, I do think sometimes, like, especially if you have a memory of something being awful, then I think when you take some time away and you come back to it, you kind of listen to it with, like, expecting it to be so terrible that sometimes you are like, oh, it's not, like, quite as bad as, like, the initial revulsion and shock that I felt upon hearing it the first time.
Fun fact, they re-released Star Wars Episode 1 like 15 years after it came out in 3D. And they said, we're going to do them all in 3D. It was the only one they did in 3D. And I went and saw it. Still not a good movie, but not nearly as bad as I remembered. Star Wars Episode 1, FYI. So there you go, Hallie. Exactly true. Speaking of things that aren't as bad as you remember, no, actually, I'm kidding. Chubby and the Gang have released a new 3-song EP. It's called Labor of Love, and it features 3 songs. Who Loves Ya? Twice Shy, and Ain't There No One, and more. Chubby and the Gang. I'm a fan, but not a huge fan. Hallie Bolt's a huge fan, or was a huge fan. Where do you stand on Chubby the Man and the rest of his plan, which involves, which doesn't rhyme with A-N, and I'm trying to make it rhyme in a wall. What's your stance? And more.
I like Chubby and the Gang. I'm not, like, the world's biggest fan, but I do everything, the majority of the stuff that they put out, I check out, and I generally really like. This was kind of cool, because it's, like, it was a Valentine's Day, like, surprise, like, release kind of thing. And I don't really, I'm not a big fan of people doing, like, kind of themed releases, like, especially with Valentine's Day, because I just feel like sometimes it just comes off as kind of like, you know, hokey and sappy and stuff. But I didn't find that with these. Like, I thought they were pretty good. Twice Shy is my favorite one. Like, it's short and it's like it's more energetic and it has more punch and you know, like it's really good. It's a little, like, lo-fi, and then Ain't There No One's also really good, and they have, like, some cool-sounding oohs to it, and there's, like, you know, it's just, it's neat. What's it called? Who Loves Ya? That one, like, I'm sure, you know, I listened to it a couple times, and the first time I didn't really like it, and then by the last time, like, it had grown on me, but, like, out of the three, it's not my favorite. Like, I still think it's good, but just not my favorite. Like, they're all catchy, and they all, like, kind of have a different feel, and the cover of it's cool, because they spell labor right, and, you know, like, the heart, like, the broken heart, that's the band picture, and, you know, like, they have the ransom lettering at the bottom, so it's like, oh, it's a punk Valentine, like, that's kind of cool. So, I liked two out of the three a lot, and one just okay. I like the video for it, though. It's cool. It's like tour footage and show footage, and it just, like, things are okay somewhere, and it's just nice to see.
It's so funny. I'm totally with you. I thought Twice Shy was definitely the best song of the bunch. Like, really good, right? It was like,
yeah.
I mean, they always kind of have, like, that Stiff Little Fingers vibe to me. At least that's, like, what I hear. But I don't know, the chorus on that one was, like, so, like, guitar-drenched and, like, yeah, sing-along-y in a way that I think of more as, like, something like Dillinger 4 would do. It was just the way, it was just this, like, wall of guitar. I thought that song was great. I was, like, and I agree that the, what was it, Who Loves You? Was that the one they did the video for?
Yeah.
I was, like, kind of surprised. I was like, oh, this is, like, kind of the weakest one. Like, why is this the one that got the video? But yeah, I just think, I don't know. But even that, which was my least favorite one, it's still, like, it's fun. It's catchy. I just think I find this band so, like, consistently enjoyable, you know? I don't think everything they do sounds like the last thing they released. I think they try some different shit. Some of it speaks to me more than other stuff, but, like, I don't know. I'm so surprised, John, that you don't, I just feel like there's something for everyone in this band. I think they do cool shit. I like them.
Well, for me, there's only one Twice Shy song, and that's Once Bitten, Twice Shy by Ian Hunter of Mott the Hoople. They be single by Ian Hunter solo. Later covered by Great White in a crappier form. At any rate, listen, I like the band. I don't love. I feel like they're not for what they kind of do a throwback to, you know, the Cockney pub rock street punk kind of thing, and it's just not hooky enough for me. I wish there was more bass in the song. The songs are very trebly, and so I like it. I just don't love it. Sorry, people. But here's what I did love: Thick. Edmore, tell us about Thick.
Yes. Okay. Thick. They are a Brooklyn-based punk trio, and they released a video for their standalone single, Love You Forever. So this is another thing that was released on Valentine's Day. And they had a, I think it's still up on their website. You can send somebody a Thick-themed Valentine, like e-card, and it's a single art for the song, which is just kind of cool. But like, yeah, the video is great. So, it opened and there's the three members of the band, and, they have like blood and like kind of dirt and stuff. So it's like clear they're zombies and they come to life and they do yoga and they burn, sage. And then they like eventually find their instruments and start playing a song. And there's also two couples in, corpse paint that are really cute. So it shows them like, you know, hanging out and I guess going on dates and like kissing and all that kind of stuff. And it's really nice. And that's intercut with the band, the zombie band, I should say, playing. And, the song is really fun. I liked it way more than I thought I would. Like, I really like Sick. I think they're great, and their album 5 Years Behind is just lots of good stuff on there. But just because of the whole Valentine's Day thing, I wasn't sure, like, is it going to be good or is it going to be like kind of, you know, one of those, but it was really good. Like, it is like sweet and it's kind of sugary and it's very melodic and there's like kind of small bursts and more like punky, like vocals. And like, it is supremely catchy. Like, it's been I listened to it and then it went through my head. So I listened to it again to get it out of my head and that didn't help. So like, I'm glad they're releasing new stuff and I really want to hear more from them. So I hope they release more soon. Hallie, what did you think of Thick?
Yeah, I mean, I love Thick. To me, they're just like definitely like a live, they're a live band. I feel like the magic of Thick is in their live show. The songwriting is never, ever, it's just never quite been exactly what I want it to be. I don't know why. But damn, like I would go see them live anytime they were playing near me. And this song live, like I'm sure I would be losing my mind. I don't know why in the studio they never grab they it, it doesn't grab me like quite as much as I want it to, but I think they're awesome, and I like to see them doing well, you know what I mean? I'd like to see that people are into them. I think they value what they do. John, were you into this?
Yeah I dug it. Not to take the conversation askew, but this kind of reminded me of a lot of the Better Burger bands that were like kind of like punkish and lo-fi, but very poppy and almost AM pop. And I just love how it's at once kind of plastic and superficial, but also totally genuine at the same time, which is a difficult line to walk. But I thought it was real cool, and I dug it. And I'm very excited to see this band on tour with Mean Jeans. Like Mean Jeans. Thick and Chats. It's going to be a real cool tour. I'm very excited. And honestly, I got to say, man, well, I was trying to be polite when Christian and Mean Gene was on last episode. And I said, oh, well, you know, the last episode I said the Chats audience is kind of like Dave Matthews sped up by 3 times. Hallie, you know what I was insinuating? I feel like I was being too ambiguous.
No, yeah, I don't know. What were you getting at?
They were extremely frat bro-y. Like I don't go to like, I don't go to a whole lot of like frat bro type con, like, I don't even really know what frat, I mean, hip hop, obviously, a lot of hip hop, like rock wise, I don't know what would be very frat bro-y, but like, you know, back in the 90s, like if you went to see like, or the 2000s, if you went to see, well, Blink 182 was very frat bro-y, frankly, back in the day.
No, I got that. If you say that it's their crowd is like a Dave Matthews crowd, then I mean, that's like, you might as well just say like, they're super bro-y. I mean, that is what that means.
Yeah.
That is exactly what that means. So I don't know. I don't think you were ambiguous. I got that.
When I saw the Chats, to a degree, it was a culture shock for me because I've only been to punk rock shows and some reggae and some hip hop shows, which is not a frat bro crowd. Well, the kind of hip hop that I go to, you know, not main, well, KRS-One and Public Enemy, old guys, frankly, you know, at any rate, so like when I saw the Chats, it was extremely bro-y, like, you know, the dudes with the 3/4 turned hat, but it just looks stupid, you know what I mean? And like moshing, but like not in a cool way. And then like some guy will just be standing there and they're like, you gotta watch out for the ladies, brah. You know, like literally, I heard somebody say that. I'm like, oh my, I'm like, it's a different universe. And it's like, you're the jackass, not this guy, you know, but so it was extremely bro-y, like extremely. And at any rate, so I think it's very cool that the chats are actually, well, hey, like Christian seemed unsure if that audience was going to love them. Assuming it's not like a 90s metal show with Slayer, where you could be Megadeth opening for Slayer and you're still going to get booed off the stage. Assuming it's not like that, you know, assuming that it's a more modern audience, I think Mean Gene, I think if it's the frat bro audience, they're going to love Mean Gene just because Mean Gene is, they're so funny, the music rocks, and it's relatively simple sounding. It's not too artsy fartsy, you know, so I think Mean Gene will crush it. I will say props to the chats for bringing Thick on the tour, because honestly, Thick is going to be somewhat of a, if it's the frat bro audience, Thick is going to be a culture shock to them, and that's very cool. I don't envy some of the abuse that, or you know, nastiness some of the women probably will get, but they're probably aware of that, and hopefully they're formulating battle plans to address that. And there are a few things better when somebody's being a dick to a comedian or a band, and the comedian is armed and just, like, wastes them from the stage. You know what I mean?
So. They might also just, I don't know, they're so good live. They might just also just, like, win over everybody. That, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to say. I also think they're tough people. Being the opening band on, like, a bigger tour can just, like, it can absolutely suck. So I'm sure there's some level on which they've prepared themselves emotionally for that.
Hallie, is being an opening band on a big tour ever worthwhile?
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? Is it? I don't know the answer to that because I was never asked to be on one, so I never had to make that decision. It is like there is something about it where it's like you are just being asked to get up and eat shit night after night. That's like kind of brutal. I think it would be kind of soul crushing, but. Obviously there's a reason people do it. And I guess it's like, even if it's a big, big crowd, even if only, you know, 10% of those people are responding well to what you're doing, you're still gaining a lot of fans. You know, if you're doing a ton of shows and every, you know, it just means that the next time you as a headliner go back to that city, you're going to have so many more people showing up to see you. So I see why bands think it's worth it.
The reason I ask is Dog Party opened up for Green Day on like 30 dates or something. Mm-hmm. And I could be wrong. My perspective is that it didn't really increase their level of fame that much. Maybe it did. I don't know, you know. And so it's like, yeah, wow, you're opening for Green Day. But on the other hand, most people, like we all know the openers because we all know who Thick is. But most people going to see the chats have no idea who Thick is. So does that pay off? You know, and frankly, they're not there to see Thick, and a lot of them don't even want to see Thick. They don't even want to see Mean Jeans. They just want to see the chats and drink and go home, you know.
But then these badass women are going to get on stage and, like, I don't know. I do feel like there's a chance they could win over that crowd. They're so magnetic live. Like, I just feel like if there's anyone that could win over a crowd, it's like, it's them, you know.
Well, there you have it. Speaking of someone that's winning over a crowd, Power Plant is winning over the RPG crowd. They just put out a limited run record via Static Shock. It's called Stump Soup. And when you buy it, you can also buy I hate this. Anybody that knows anything about RPGs that is Dungeons & Dragons, forever and ever and ever, it was called a campaign or a quest book. Now when people are trying to be fancy, they call it a module. No, it's a campaign. A module. Get out of here. At any rate, Power Plant, with their soundtrack, Stump Soup, you can buy a module/campaign book that comes with the soundtrack that you're supposed to play the soundtrack and play the Dungeons & Dragons campaign. Which sounds cool, and I was going to buy, except for shipping from England, it was like $45. And I'm like, well, it's cool, but the gimmick isn't worth quite that much to me. But if you live in the UK or you're a huge D&D guy, I say it's worth it. The soundtrack itself is pretty it actually sounds a lot like this is a pretty obscure reference, but like Zork or like a lot of those text-based RPG games from like the mid-80s where it's like heavily Moog sounding or synth sounding and kind of cold and post-punkish, frankly, even though at the time the people making that music weren't post-punk guys. They were computer programmers that were just doing their best with the tools they had at hand. At any rate, I think this is a cool thing, an interesting thing, and as the listeners know, I'm a big fan of combining RPG games with music.
Yeah, I mean, this is fun. Wait, how do you know about this, John? Like, is this a release people are talking about? Like, how do you know about this?
How do I know about Power Plant doing this?
Yeah.
Because on their previous few releases, Power Plant was very much a maximum rock and roll style band. So I try to keep my ear to the ground for those kinds of bands, because frankly, those are undercover to punk news. So to maintain our cred, if you will, I try to cover maximum rock and roll style bands. But then they came out with this wacky release, which is amusing and interesting, if you ask me.
Yeah. I mean, as their like mission statement, like creating music for a campaign or a module, whatever you want to call it, like, did you feel like they were successful?
Well, from an artistic statement standpoint, I would say they are incredibly successful. From a practical utility standpoint, no, because as anyone knows, when you're playing an RPG, I mean, you play for like 3 or 4 hours. And you rarely you actually listen to music. And if you did, this would become somewhat oppressive because the music is kind of depressing sounding and you wouldn't want to listen to this on a loop. So it's a very excellent artistic statement. From a pure utility standpoint, it's interesting, but not practical.
I mean, when I like first started listening to this, I was like, what the fuck is this? I was like, because if I listened to it just trying to think of it as like music that I would like listen to in my house or in my car or like hanging out with people, it's like, to me, I was like, this is horrible. And then I like had to kind of like adjust my ears a little bit, and I had to be like, what if I, you know, it sounds like kind of like video game music, right? You know, and I was like, what if I was playing a game? If I was playing a game, would I like this? And it like really did change it for me. I was like, oh, like actually, like, cause I don't really respond to most video game music. So I guess it's not like a super flattering comparison, but I was like, oh, if I was playing a game, I would be in, this is so much catchier and so much more enjoyable to me than like most like gaming, like music, you know? But it was interesting, you know, like, it was interesting that I do think it does convey something of like a story. I mean, what are the things that are supposed to happen in the campaign, right? It's like you see a creepy old man, you fight rat hogs. I was like, if I could just picture myself seeing a creepy old man or fighting rat hogs, it was like, it really enhanced the music a lot. I was like, oh, now I'm kind of into this.
I had a comment there, but I forgot what it was. Emma, what was your stance?
I think it's fun. I think it's a great, like, idea. And, I totally agree with what both of you are saying, and, like, that the music is better, like, or would be better on its own, because then you can, like, focus on it, and then you're playing it out in your mind, and, you know, like, all that kind of stuff, because it does sound like video game music. And when I hear that music, it's like, oh yeah, you know, you look at the title and it's like, oh, okay, this makes me think of, you know, forests or whatever, so I'm gonna do this. And, you know, like, it's just, it's fun that way. The actual, like, module would be cool to play, because, you know, like, it sounds fun, and it sounds like, you know, like, I'd love to explore the province, love to live a new life, I'd love to make a soup, you know, and possibly throw that soup on a creepy old man. Like, you know, it's fun. So, oh, and that was the other thing, in their, like, Bandcamp description, they have, like, listen only at night, hold head in both hands while listening, when life gives stump, make soup. And I just love that so much. It was just the best. It made my day. So it's not like typically what I listen, like sit down and listen to, but I'm going to try to sit down and listen to like the whole thing and try to do like, you know, just have like an hour meditation sort of, you know.
On a related note, M and Hallie, do you guys know what is a very niche genre of vinyl pressed records, which are very expensive upon release, and then are insanely expensive several months after release. I realize that's a weird way to phrase that, but you'll probably never guess it.
I don't know.
Yeah, what?
Yeah.
Late 80s and early 90s soundtracks to video games are both being officially pressed and bootlegged. And, like, off the bat, they cost, like, $70. And then 6 months later, they cost, like, $300. Like, if you want, like, Mario 3 on, like, vinyl for some reason, it's, like, $300.
Oh, really?
That's crazy.
But, like even, like, obscure games that, like, I mean, I was never a huge video game guy. I mean, I played them back in the day. But, like a game, like, not even, like, Ninja Gaiden. Like, even, like, a more obscure game than that. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, an obscure game to everyone, like Track and Field or something. Like, if you want that on vinyl, why would you want Track and Field on vinyl? Like, $120. Is that weird, or is that just weird because I'm not into it? You know what I mean?
But you can certainly get it. Like, you, anything you feel nostalgia for, like, you understand where people are collectors and they just want, they're just like, oh, I have to have that.
But true, but the one counterattack to that is a lot of those video game soundtracks, Hallie, you and I are you know, roughly the same generation. Yeah. It's like, those songs are like mind-numbingly annoying. You know, like,
right, really super repetitive.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
yeah.
why would you want to listen to that? Like, when you're playing a video game, it kind of fades in the background because you're like thinking, you know, but like if you're sitting there listening to it, oh man. At any rate, let's play a song. Who's going to play a track?
Well, I'll play a track.
Hit it.
Yeah, so this is, Lou from Caves, and she's played with Reviver and Warriors and a million, Mike Eric Band. She, you know, does, you know, solo stuff now as All Away Lou, and she plays all the instruments on this new, she released a single in the fall, and it was really, really good. But the whole album's out now, and she plays every single instrument on it, which is always super impressive to me. And the album's called Things Will Change. If you'd like this, like, check out I won't play the first single because that came out a while ago, but you might listen to Looks Right, which was the first single. But this is just another great track off what I think is a super, super solid album. This is Try As I Might by All Away Lou.
far back, and that was all the way Lou. Here's something else people are excited about. Boris the Sprinkler is having a 30th anniversary show, and we're going to wrap that back to Lou because the Ergs are opening, not the Mikey Erg band. The Ergs are opening, as is Butcher's Union, which is a Dillinger Force spinoff band. The Leg Hounds and First Wave Punkers Miners are opening. The Miners, that is. A lot of people are very excited about this. A lot of people love Boris the Sprinkler. I've never been a huge fan. I'm certainly not a hater. But to me, it's Hattie Bullitt, are you a big fan of Boris the Sprinkler? And does the 30th anniversary mean something to you?
I'm like a big Boris the Sprinkler fan in that, like, seeing them live is super, super hilarious. And those guys are just, they're nice. They're so nice and they're so cool. Like, I wouldn't say there's like an album of theirs that I just have like listened to over and over and over again, but they're so good at what they do. And to be honest, like, even the album they put out in 2019, the Vespa to Venus, it's so good. I don't feel like I heard people talking about that record. It's like, it's really strong. These guys have been making music for a long time, and for them to, like, in 2019 put out something that good is, to me, there's super, super exciting and remarkable. And I don't know. They're just so, you know, for anyone that doesn't know Boris the Sprinkler, it's like, it's just super spazzy, pop punk. Really weird. Like, Revan Norb, the singer, and, you know, he writes all the songs, or at least the lyrics. He's just like a real like Poindexter. He's like super smart and like nerdy about all kinds of weird, different random topics. And so the songs, I don't know. He just like, he'll intro the songs, just start talking super fast. It's really hard I'm obviously having trouble explaining, but like, he's such a personality, and he'll wear like a weird helmet with like horns, right? Isn't that what he wears on stage, John? Have you ever seen them live?
Yeah.
You know, he's like super wiry and skinny. He's all over the stage. It's just, it's really an experience. They're so, 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 so fun. And like, I can't believe, this whole lineup is just kind of mind blowing. Like, if this were any closer, I would go, you know. You got the Ergs, you've got Butcher's Union, which is members of Dillinger Four and other bands. That's super exciting to see them. That's like Patty and Billy from Dillinger Four, along with, I think like Patty's wife, who I shouldn't just say Patty's wife. She's like a musician in her own right. Christy from Pink Mink. Just that's like a super group of sorts that are on the bill. And I don't know the Miners as well, John. Do you know the Miners from Green Bay?
The answer is no. Only I know about them now because they mentioned them. They were like one of these bands that formed like during the first wave of punk and are punk-ish power pop, a lot like that band Africa Corpse or that band the Suicide Commandos. So kind of punky, but like AM poppy as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, a great example would be The Last from L.A. Everyone knows the band The Last. Is all the first wave punkers, Black Flag, Descendants, Middle Class. They're like, yeah, The Last were the greatest. And everyone else is like, who? And you go back and you listen and you're like, this is that great, but it's because they were ahead of their time, and now that everyone's caught up, they don't seem that impressive. But at the time, they were extremely like special, you know.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. This lineup seems completely amazing. This is going to be such a fun show. I'm like kind of mad. I can't go to it.
And more. Any stance on Boris the Sprinkler?
No, I have not heard them.
But there we go. Here's something that everyone's heard. Take your heart and put it in a blender. Eve Six is going on tour. The openers are very contemporary poppin' bands. We Are the Union, Field Medic, and Jake Flores. And this is very surprising because prior to a sort of Twitter explosion, Eve Six, like Third Eye Blind or like any of those kind of sort of, I don't use the word has been, but I one-hit wonder 90s bands, they were kind of on the county fair circuit. If it was 10 more years, they'd be up there with Lynyrd Skynyrd on the county fair circuit. But the main E6 guy, I don't know his name, he's got a Twitter where he started being like really funny, and now he's like really political. It has totally rejuvenated the career of Eve Six. And now Eve 6 is kind of like a band that all the youth love. He's bringing kind of very poppin' bands with him along, or the band is. And in a way, his wit and commentary has totally reinvigorated the band, something you wouldn't see in the days of pre-social media. I guess there's two questions here. Is this amusing and awesome, and is Eve 6 underappreciated, or is Eve 6 really just a mediocre late 90s, early 2000s band, and we're all getting a little too cute with ourselves? Hallie Bullard, I'll kick a difficult question to you first, and then I'll let Enmo respond, because one of her favorite bands is playing this tour.
Yeah, I mean, this is so let me just start by saying that, like, I don't know a single Eve 6 song. I thought that I did, and then I looked them up. I was like, oh, I think they, and it was like every song that I was like, oh, I think I know one of their songs, it was another band. It was like Third Eye Blind or like some other horrible band from that same era. Like, wait, why, what song do you think I know?
Put Your Heart in a Blender, A Beautiful Oblivion.
Oh, wait.
You know that song, Hallie? Put Your Heart in a Blender, A Beautiful Oblivion.
Yeah.
I don't know if I do. I mean, I don't know if I do. It might just, sing it. Maybe if someone other than John sings it, maybe I'll learn nothing.
I can't do much better.
No, I just to say that I don't really know this band. I do think, didn't they did something else really funny recently, right? Wasn't it like people were saying that they would be the worst possible band to cover an Op Ivy song, and then
they did?
Yeah. So I don't know, right? It's like kind of both, right, John? Like they are like a really mediocre radio rock band from that era that I don't really have a lot of interest in, but I don't know. But if someone's like legitimately clever and funny and kind of like, you know, sort of like owning the things there's people are saying about them, I don't know. I think it's fine for them to have a resurgence if the guy's that clever and people are enjoying his stuff. And there were a lot of people that were younger than I was when this stuff was coming out. And so it reminds them of, you know, their childhood or, you know, middle school or something. You know, they have some, you know, I certainly liked some bad radio rock when I was a kid. So I have a feeling it's probably that generation that's like embracing them. Don't you think, John?
I would swallow like, my pride, I would choke on the rhymes, but the lack thereof would leave me empty inside. Swallow my doubt, turn it inside out, find nothing but faith in nothing. Want to put my tender heart in a blender, watch it spin around to a beautiful oblivion. Rendezvous, then I'm through with you.
Wait. Hold on. Are you reading that off the internet, or do you have these words memorized?
No, I'm reading it off the internet, I've got somewhat of a hot take, and I guess because there is more media now than ever, and because media is more preserved now than ever, more than ever, we have recycling, reevaluation, and recontextualizing past things. If we go back to, say, 90, and I'm not a professor or anything, but if we go back to 1900s, there's only like 30 songs anybody knows because they are the folk songs that have been passed down through the generation. So there's 30 songs, and the guy that plays it, he doesn't quite know the lyrics, so he changes the lyrics, and a new song is written. And that's why a lot of these blues songs have like 12 different names and 12 different lyrics when it's really the same song. So there wasn't like a way to permanently record a lot of these kinds of things. Now, in the modern age, we have so much available to us, not just 30 songs that you sort of remember. You can, with the flick of your finger, you can hear a song that was recorded in 1943 as it was recorded in 1943, which is insane. So we have all this recontextualization. And the good things is, if I want to hear The Last and see why The Last was so important to Bill Stevenson, I can go hear The Last. That's great. But the other side of that is, for whatever reason, human beings, and I'm sure it's related to some sort of survival mechanism or something, human beings love to recontextualize things that were mediocre and say, no, actually, that was a masterpiece. I don't hate Eve 6. I think their one song is a perfectly fine radio rock song, and it's not special and it's not moving. But for whatever reason, instead of saying, hurrah, Keith Morris is the best, but actually people do say that actually, but you know, people like to rally around stuff that gives them comfort. Here it is. It is a survival mechanism. People like to rally around things that give them comfort. And the people that are rallying around Eve 6 now are 25, 30, 35, right? And that means that this goes back to middle school and high school when really you think you have concerns, but you have no concerns. Your life is a bowl of cherries for most people. Not everybody, you know, but for a lot of people, you know. Or if your life isn't so good, at least you have the song that you and your friends can unite to. So what you are really clinging to is it's the definition of nostalgia, of a memory of yourself, which you are associating with something that was prevalent at the time. And so that's fine. Listen, it's not the worst crime in the world. But I feel in the current age, people do that a lot, and they get too kind of happy with themselves, too cute with themselves. They're like, "Woo, Eve Six!" You know, it's like, do we really need to be saluting Eve Six? It's almost undignified to really, you know, whip yourself into a frenzy over something that wasn't that great to begin with. It's like at South Park says, like member berries or whatever. It's like. Listen, something can just have been mediocre, and yeah, I enjoyed it, but it was mediocre, you know. I used to like Guns N' Roses. They're really not that great people. At any rate, the point being is what I think would be very cool is the Eve Six guy, he's got a real opportunity here. I'll be interested to see. And by saying he's got a real opportunity, this is if John controls the universe, here would be the best thing, you know, which John doesn't control the universe. So people are like expecting like nostalgia, you know. Well, actually, two ways. The unrealistic way and the realistic way. The unrealistic way, which John would love to see and everyone else would hate. Like, what if he comes out and he just does like the most whacked out, like art damaged, like busted, like concert ever, like completely like hard to listen to, you know, like completely frantic and insane and just like a mind trip. That would be awesome because people are coming to E6 for 90s nostalgia and comfort, and he comes out and plays the most dangerous thing ever. However, what might be more interesting or equally as interesting, he comes out, he does the Heart and the Blender song and all that, but then maybe he makes insightful commentary or he's self-aware of who he is, and people hate Meta these days, and I'm annoyed by Meta things as well, but it would be interesting if on stage somehow he uses his art to comment on himself as opposed to just running through the hits County Fair style. That could be interesting as well. And more. What do you think?
I think that Eve Six and We Are the Union are going to do a small Operation Ivy set. Because they covered Sound System. So, and they're on tour for a while. So I think that they're going to do at least Sound System like each night.
And I think that's probably a good call, right? Yeah, they're going to do that.
And do you think this tour is helping E6 more or We Are the Union more? And could it damage like right now We Are the Union is the pop and ska punk band or one of the three pop and ska punk bands. Could this damage them because they're playing to, as we discussed before, the wrong audience, the people that want 90s nostalgia?
I think that well, like, I found out about the Eve Six tour because of, like, a post on, like, We Are the Union's social media. So I think that it's going to help. I think We Are the Union is going to draw a lot of young people to go to it and then, like, go for them and kind of stay for Eve Six. You know? So I think they're going to attract their fan base there. And when everyone else, like, you know, who's like, I just want to hear the Heart in a Blender song. You know, like, when they see everyone else kind of having fun and, like, the music, then maybe they'll kind of join in. I don't see it hurting We Are the Union. The only thing I could think of it, like, hurting Eve Six would be, like, if they get on stage and they're terrible. But, like, they're putting out an album later this year. They put out a live EP, I think it was last year or the year before. So, like, you know, they're in practice, so I think they're going to be good. But, yeah, just beneficial for everyone right now. And also the tour poster is a meme.
Which is that's great. Awesome.
It's a cat meme.
And more, what would you prefer Eve Six do live, were you to go? Like, what would you be your ideal Eve Six set?
Ooh, I only know the Heart in a Blender song. I did like the Operation Ivy cover, so I'd be up for, like, more of that. But, yeah, like, if he got on stage and did his, like, Twitter thing, I think that would be kind of fun.
Should I go out of curiosity, or am I wasting my time and my money and I'm telling a joke to myself that no one else cares about?
How much are tickets?
Good question. Let's say $25.
That's exactly the right question.
Fair enough. Well, there's your answer. We'll talk about that later. A couple of last stories. Fusion Babies. Fusion Babies is the spinoff band of Wacko because it features Gar-Tex from Wacko. They just put out their debut EP. Actually, it's really a demo. It's not even an EP. The demo is called Conception. It's digital only, and it's got four tracks. And listen, people, it rocks. This is what I want out of punk rock right now. It's fast. It's loud. It's dangerous. It's fresh. It's somewhat fresh. It's classic and fresh at the same time. There's a lot of hardcore bands out there right now, and by hardcore I mean NYHC hardcore bands, even if they're not from NYHC, NY. That they're like so uninteresting and so like, it's like, dude, Madball was doing this in 1995, and everyone's like, oh, this band is so fresh. I'm like, it's like, no, it's not fresh. It's like, it's literally like 40 years old. It's like not that impressive. By contrast, Fusion Babies, they've got some of the Poison Ideas type thing going on, but they sound fresh. They've got fresh lyrics, and more than anything, I think they like a lot of cool, interesting, hardcore-ish bands are doing. They wrap the whole concept together with the songs so that lyrically we are getting unique lyrics that honestly could have almost come from like an X-Ray Specs album or something, and now it's being presented in a rough hardcore context. I dug this. I think this is rad. I hope they put out a cassette tape. I hope they go on tour. I think this is cool and more. Fusion Babies, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, big thumbs up. This was great. Like, yeah, it just goes by so fast, and it's so good, and, like, you can't tell me, like, where's the, I guess, it's a bunch of, like, at signs and number signs and, like, you know, like, when they swear in comics and stuff. Bat, you know, like, psychic youth, like, it's all just so, so good, and exactly, like, they have that, like, that energy, and it's captured, like, in recording, you know, and it's, like, you listen to it, and you get kind of fired up, you know, it's great. I'm all for it, and I'm looking forward to, hearing more from them, and I really like the album, or the demo cover, and it's, like, the band, they're on like a, I don't know if it's a, like a fungus or if it's a flower, and then there's like this giant sperm, and it's great.
That was like, that was a pretty great image. Yeah, this gave me like Bratmobile vibes. Yeah. John, did you listen to Bratmobile back in the day, or M? I mean, I wouldn't have listened to them back in the day, but maybe you'd listen to them now.
I have listened to them now.
I get the Bratmobile comparison. I
right, kind of lo-fi and...
Yeah.
No, wait, sorry, what were you going to say?
I think this is a little bit... I agree that there is certainly a Bratmobile comparison. I would say this is a little bit more, though, on the nihilistic punk sound-wise than Bratmobile was, though. Like, mm-hmm. A little bit more Poison Idea-ish, maybe, or, you know, or Germs-ish, or however you want to phrase that.
Yeah. I liked it.
Well, let's play a song. And then we're going to come back, and then we're going to talk about a sad story, sadly, and we're going to wrap up the episode. So one more play song, we're going to come back, and we're going to do one more story.
All right, so this is a song that I have been meaning to play for a while, and it's from Toronto-based garage punk band Winelets, and the song's called Eyes, and it's off their album Mushroom Death Sex Bummer Party.
And we are back, and sadly, we're going to wrap up tonight's episode with a sad story, but we got to do it. King Louis Bankston of the Exploding Hearts passed away. He was he was 49, and of course, he was in a whole bunch of bands. Probably the biggest band he was in was the Exploding Hearts, but maybe the band the Royal Pendleton or the Persuaders, and also the band Missing Monuments. If you are into Neo Power Pop or Neo Garage Rock, this guy is like one of the main guys. And sadly, he passed away. And I believe it was unexpected. There was no prior news about a sickness or anything. So a lot of people think the Exploding Hearts are the band. And, of course, quite sadly, the Exploding Hearts themselves have a tragic history. Two of the members were killed in a bus accident, and Louis was one of the three. Yeah. And Louis was one of the survivors. So, man, it's a rough all around, and a very influential band, a band that a lot of people love. How do you book Exploding Hearts or King Louis, a fan, or how do you feel?
I was a huge Exploding Hearts fan, like huge. That was like that period when they had that accident, it was like really hard to explain. Like I really do feel like the whole scene was really in mourning. That was the record that everyone had been listening to, like everyone. It was like, I remember feeling weird that I was that sad about people dying that I didn't actually know. It was a big deal. He wasn't in the band. He wasn't in that van. He wasn't in the band anymore when they had that accident. He had quit the band, I think, by that point.
You are correct, and I misspoke. He left the band after the album came out, and the accident was 3 months later. You're correct.
Yeah. Still, I don't know. That would be a hard thing to get over. I mean, like I'm saying, I was a fan of theirs, and it was hard to get over. I mean, I can't even imagine really what that would have been like for him. But my God, what a songwriter, right? I mean, you look at just Guitar Romantic, you look at just that Exploding Hearts album, and it's, I think he's given songwriting credit on all but like three of those songs. And that album is just massive. So yeah, I don't know what a talent, and just sort of, you know, you feel like, you start to feel like certain projects just have like a sadness that like spirals out from them. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be over dramatic about it, but it's like you hear about like people talking about like Rosemary's Baby, and it's like everyone involved in it, like something horrible happened to them. But like, it starts to feel like that, just like, oh no, like this was such a good band that just like did such good stuff. And then somehow there's just like, like sad, it feels like all these people are coming to kind of sad and early ends. And it's a bummer. It's really a bummer. Like great, great songwriter. And like a huge, huge loss.
Yeah. Well said. I think none of us can sum it up better than that. So, let's play a song. Hallie, what song do you think we should play by King Louis, the Exploding Hearts or one of his other things? What do you think we should do?
I kind of just want to go with the hit because I read such a cute story, which was that he sang. Did you read this, John? That he sang "I'm a Pretender" to Alex Chilton, and Alex Chilton looked him straight in the face and said, "Louis, you just wrote a hit song." and that was right before he went to Portland. He hadn't met the guys from Exploding Hearts yet and hadn't joined that band yet. But it was, you know, he had that exchange with Alex Chilton like months before he moved to Portland, and then met the guys from the Exploding Hearts, and then was like, "Hey, I have this great song that my other bands don't want to do. Like, will you do this song with me?" And then it really ended up being, I mean, I'd say like Modern Kicks And that one were kind of like the two songs off Guitar Romantic that people were, I mean, people were floored by the whole album, but those two songs in particular. So I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the obvious choice, but I'd play I'm a Pretender. Did you have something else you wanted to play?
I think I'm a Pretender. This is I'm a Pretender in the Game of Love. And we will see you next week. R.I.P.
Turn the light out.